episode 22 of the Radix Copycast. I'm Emily King, Radix's Research and Marketing Executive. Today I am joined by Fiona Campbell-Howes, Radix's Managing Director.
Hello.
In this episode, we're going to be exploring what you can do to ensure that your content marketing stays fresh and useful for your audience. Why are we worried about stale content? Well, as Steve pointed out in our 2014 video roundup, with the various practices in content marketing now being seen as best practice, there is a great chance that many will stop innovating and just produce content by rote. So we need to surprise audiences and keep on surprising them in order to hold their interest. So here today we want to discuss our five top ways for trying to keep content fresh. Fiona.
Thank you. Yes, yeah, so I think it's a really interesting topic. And I think, you know, over the last few years, we've seen a lot of creative experimentation in content marketing. People kind of exploring new formats and new ways of getting information across. And there is, I mean, that's been going on for 3 or 4 years. And I think there is starting to be maybe a sense now that some of these, what were novel formats, and they're becoming a little bit stale and everybody's using them. And there's a kind of set way to do an ebook or something like that. And there is maybe a little bit concerned that things are getting a bit stale and we need to keep moving to keep things fresh. Having said that, I would say I was looking at some research yesterday that was done by Holger Schultz on his B2B content marketing LinkedIn group of, you know, the content marketing tactics that marketers had used last year. And it's still the case that, you know, press releases, white papers, blogs and case studies are still at the top of the list. So even though there's been a kind of explosion in experimentation, it hasn't been everybody doing it. And a lot of people are still falling back on the old staples that they were always using. So I think there certainly is a case for carrying on keeping things fresh. And I think there probably does need to be still a lot of experimentation and kind of a bit more bravery and boldness, especially I think around the top of the funnel. So at the top of the funnel is when you want to get people's attention for the first time. So they're not engaged with you yet. They maybe don't know you exist. They maybe don't know that the problem that they've got exists. And in order to get their attention for the first time, I think you need to do something quite bold and creative. And that's maybe where companies are finding that their content is a little bit stale and old and isn't getting the attention they need. So what can you do to keep your content fresh and relevant and striking and grabbing attention grabbing? Well, I think the first thing is not to be set in your ways. So it's kind of look around at what other people are doing, and probably not, I mean, there's a fine line between looking around for inspiration and looking around and basically stealing stuff and plagiarizing. So it's not necessarily looking at what people in your own industry are doing, but looking wider and looking at what people in other industries, maybe in consumer sectors or maybe in the media are doing, and looking at what kind of new formats and new ways of communicating information are they coming up with, and maybe borrowing some of those and experimenting with some of those. So that's maybe looking at what's working in consumer advertising, you know, what's working on really popular sites like BuzzFeed, what kind of formats are they using, how are media companies and others using graphics to create really compelling images to share on social media. A couple of years ago, there was a really revolutionary piece in the New York Times called Snowfall, which we've talked about before, which is a real multimedia extravaganza of telling a story with different multimedia elements. And I think although that itself is maybe become a little bit cliched and tired, people are still taking kind of inspiration from that, looking at how to use different multimedia elements to tell a story.
I mean, they had done some follow-ups to that. It wasn't last year, it was the year before last, the tomato can blues piece was really good.
Yeah, and I think it's, people talk about the kind of print media being in decline and, you know, they're not doing anything innovative. But I think if you look at some of the ways that print media has transitioned to online and to digital, they are leading the way in many cases in the kind of content that they're creating. So I think there's a lot of inspiration to be taken there. So yes, it's just looking around more, not being insular and inward looking, but just looking around at what's going on and, you know, what's a good format that you can borrow from somewhere else. But it's not necessarily just looking around for new formats that you can use, but maybe going back and revisiting some of the existing formats that you've been using and seeing how you can maybe tweak them or update them or use them in a slightly different way.
I mean, other media already does that. If you consider the novel, there are so many different ways you can write a novel. And it started off in one set way originally, you know, and the way it kind of like looking at ebooks and just kind of like being, well, there's no such just one set way that to write an ebook. You could do things differently. I feel like at the moment there's kind of like a slight hybrid, and I'm not sure if it's because of people kind of really taking to SlideShare since ebooks became a popular format, of kind of like ebooks and slide decks slowly kind of becoming one. Have you seen this slight merging?
I think that's the case, although I still think that SlideShare, people haven't really, a lot of people haven't really exploited SlideShare to its full potential. Mm. So a lot of people are still using SlideShare as a kind of place to put existing presentations and
cut up
existing ebooks and put them onto SlideShare, rather than thinking about what the platform can do as a native platform. But I think that's really interesting what you've just said about how novels have changed, and it just made me think that your ebooks and your SlideShares, but almost every piece of content that we would traditionally have created in B2B is like a linear narrative. And I think there are some quite interesting ways to chop them up and make them less linear and make them more kind of optional narratives in different directions. So that, especially with kind of mobile tablet platforms, online platforms, you don't necessarily have to start at page one and work your way through to page 10. You can do things digitally, so you can just find your own path through the content and pick and choose the bits that you want. And I was talking to our colleague Kieran yesterday about, I think it was a short story that he had been reading, which is actually presented as a deck of cards. So the first page and the last page are always the first page and the last page, but then you can sort of shuffle the interior of the story to kind of make your own narrative out of it. So I think there's quite a lot of interesting experimentation to be done with non-linear narratives, if you like. If that sounds a bit kind of too bold and experimental, I think there are kind of minor tweaks that you can also make to your old content to freshen it up and make it new. Case studies, for example, if you've got a written case study, or a set of written case studies, you could go back and revisit those. And one of our favourite topics, why not turn it into a set of comics, a comic or a set of comics? So basically comic book stories about how your customers have overcome problems or achieved goals, but told in a kind of visual illustrated format rather than a text-based format. Not very many people have really mastered the art of infographics yet, I don't think. But once you've mastered the art of infographics, it's great to go back and sort of look over your existing content. Is there anything here that we can tell in a kind of data visualization style way? Is there any kind of great data point we can pull out of here and illustrate it visually? So I think, you know, there's a lot that can be done to go back over existing content, try and repurpose it for new formats and make it fresh and new and you know, use it at different stages in the funnel and use it for different, you know, platforms and devices as well.
But while we're sort of saying, you know, you don't necessarily have to experiment, you shouldn't be afraid to experiment. It's now easier than ever to just do small trials of different formats or different ways of arranging content in different formats. So you shouldn't be afraid to just, you know, trial new formats. You know, it doesn't have to be a year-long campaign or something. It could be something that's a month, a few months, obviously no longer than maybe 6 months, you know, of the year. And look at new tools that you could also use. You don't necessarily have to invest in actual new paid technology. You could use free platforms such as Twine, which is a way of creating, well, either a linear narrative as a web page or a non-linear narrative as a web page. And it's a way of sort of coding up kind of hyperlinked bits of text so that, I mean, you can add your own sort of formatting and visual HTML and everything like that and CSS afterwards, but kind of code up a story where if somebody clicks on one thing, they're taken to a different bit in the narrative, and if they've clicked on a number of different things, then that means that they reach a different ending to, say, somebody else who clicked on different things. But that is a free service that it may take a while to get your head around. I've been trying for a while.
So this is like anybody that sort of grew up in the 80s and had any interest in kind of fantasy and sci-fi. I remember the Choose Your Own Adventure books, fantasy, Choose Your Own Adventure books. So this is a way of kind of really cheaply and easily creating your own kind of Choose Your Own Adventure style narrative, which is something that we're going to be looking at, I think, this year.
Obviously, we've talked about SlideShare, but if you don't have perhaps easy access to clear graphics and design, so that you could perhaps try and experiment with slide decks, you could use something such as Haiku Deck, which is perhaps most suited to slide decks beyond anything else. It's free to a certain level, and they've got sort of basic templates in that, but it's more about emphasizing short, quick points on single slides rather than going into any great depth.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, because not everybody has designers on tap, and a lot of the things we've talked about kind of rely on great design as well as great copy. So there are tools like Haiku Deck where you don't need to have a designer to create some visually stunning images in a sort of slideshare style.
Yeah. Also, I mean, talking about images and that, if you're looking for images and if you're a bit unsure about how Creative Commons works, I've been slowly becoming more interested in Creative Commons images, and I use a search Creative Commons quite a bit to look for safe for commercial purpose images on Flickr, and a lot of it is to do with basically sort of like you have to reference what the image is, who made it, what Creative Commons license it is under, and then link to obviously the original image, you know, so if it's on Flickr, like its original hosting page, but also the license itself. And you'll actually find that while a user might try and change the license on a work after it's been set at that, and you've used it when it's been under a certain license, you won't actually be affected if they decide to change the license on that image. And another, I mean, if, moving away from visual stuff altogether, if you feel like joining us in podcasting, which, you know, crazily, you might, beyond making sure that you've got a few reasonable bits of gear, do avoid recording close to things like computers because of their fans.
Or cars going past, or, right? I think it's a train going past right at this minute.
Or the train going past. But as long as you can ensure that your audio doesn't hurt people's ears, you could try using free levels of services like Audioboom, previously Audioboo, to upload your audio and kind of set up a little portal for your own short podcasts.
And we think podcasts are going to be take off a bit this year, don't we?
Yes.
That seems to be the consensus. I know Jay Pulitzi at Content Marketing Institute has said podcasts are going to be big this year. We know that Jay Baer has set up a kind of aggregator portal for any marketing-based podcasts. So we think we're going to see more of those this year.
And if you don't fancy creating your own podcast but want to feel a bit inspired, you really should try listening to like NPR Serial podcast, because that is technically non-fiction, but it's a podcast documentary style with a bit of fiction and drama. Just it's amazing.
I feel like I've totally missed out because I haven't listened to any of Serial.
I've listened to a few. It's quite good.
And I think maybe the last point for, you know, how to keep your content fresh and original is really I mean, you can get bogged down in, you know, getting excited about new formats and new ways of communicating things. But at the end of the day, it's got to be something that your customers and potential customers respond to positively. And so there's absolutely no substitute for getting out there and talking to customers and understanding what's on their minds, what they're interested in, what are the top problems they're facing at the moment, what are they trying to do in their jobs, what do they need help with, what could they do better, and using that as inspiration for your content, certainly, but also understanding, you know, what kind of media and what kind of content do your customers enjoy engaging with. You know, it's no use creating a podcast if your customers only want to watch videos, or it's no use, you know, writing really dense white papers if they want to get everything from a kind of how-to video or a webinar or a webcast. So it's really crucial to know what kind of formats your customers respond to best or engage with best, and keep that in mind when you're freshening up your content strategy.
And if perhaps you're looking for some ideas as to which types of content your potential audience or customers kind of find interesting, you could always have a look, see what they're doing on places like Twitter or LinkedIn, see what they're sharing, see whether or not that's generating any interest. And, you know, just do a bit of social listening or look around topics that you want to write about but you're not sure if your customers are talking about it, and to then get confirmation as to whether or not they are talking about it. Just because you mentioned white papers again, and you were mentioning earlier about a lot of this is about top of funnel. You did a blog post before Christmas about sort of like, or at least you've previously discussed how different types of content are suited to different levels of the funnel. Yep. Just to clarify for our listeners who might not be sure, white papers, where are they better placed?
Well, I personally think, I mean, there is a school of thought that says white papers are dead and shouldn't be used anymore. But I personally think that white papers do have their place, and their place is sort of around about the middle towards the bottom of the funnel. So this is when you've got people's attention with your sparkly multimedia content at the top of the funnel. You've made them realise they've got a problem. You've kind of made them understand that you're somehow well placed to solve this problem. And now you need to explain to them exactly how you're going to solve it. And that's where the white paper format comes in. So at some point during the, you know, what you might call the buying journey, the person that's going to use or buy your product or your service is going to have to understand exactly what value they get from it, what benefit they get from it, and they're going to have to be able to explain that to superiors probably, or somebody that's going to sign off on the budget. And there I do think you need kind of weightier content that really goes into detail about, you know, what you're going to get for your money, how it's going to solve your problems, what benefits you're going to get from it. And that's why I think that the white paper still definitely has relevance, but in that towards middle towards the bottom of the funnel.
But then in the spirit of this episode, what would you say to people who are perhaps thinking that their white papers are getting a bit too stuffy and stale? What could they do to perhaps keep them fresh?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, Emily, because I've just written a blog post on how to make your technical copy a bit sparklier. So I've got some tips in there. Even if you're writing quite dense technical copy, like you might be in a white paper, some ways to kind of liven that up. So it's including anecdotes, it's including real life examples, it's including kind of similes and analogies and metaphors to bring your copy a bit more to life than some of the traditional white papers that we've seen. And probably again, because white papers have tended to be really text heavy documents, it's probably again working with a designer just to make that text look a bit sparklier and shinier on the page, you know, pull out stats, pull out key quotes, and just make it easier and nicer to read.
Well, that's all we've got time for in this episode of the Radix Copycast. You can follow Radix on Twitter at radix.com, and you'll find our website at radix-communications.com, where you can also sign up for our monthly e-newsletter for latest copywriting tips and insights. I'll be sure to give you a link to that new blog post by Fiona in the show notes on our website.